with paper hoop. Paper five. Okay.
So, agenda paper 5. The interpretation committee received a request to clarify accounting for assets and liability arising from uncertain tax positions. In this agenda paper, we analyze the scope of this project, the unit of account, and the possible approach for the measurement method as requested in the September meeting. Firstly, we analyze the scope. We were concerned that setting a scope for specific situations would be an arbitrary bright line. We noted that such a rule would be unnecessary if a recognition threshold would be applied, because the threshold would enable entities to avoid the undue cost associated with measurement. Consequently, we recommend that all income tax positions should be included within the scope of this project, but an entity should recognize an asset or liability only if it meets the probable threshold. This recognition threshold would be consistent with other guidance in IAS 12 and with the current conceptual framework. As noted in the finalized decision on the issue of recognition in July, we think IS 12, not IS 37, provides the relevant guidance on recognition for this issue. Secondly, we analyzed the unit of account. We think that an entity should make a judgment about the unit of account because we think that such an approach would provide more relevant information for each case. If a decision on a specific position is expected to affect or be affected by other positions, we think that those should be accounted for as a single unit of account. Lastly, we analyze the possible approach for measurement. We think that the entity should make a judgment between the expected value and the most likely amount, on the basis of which method an entity expects to better predict the amount. This is because it would provide more useful information to predict future cash flows for each case. We also think that this approach is understandable because it is similar to IFRS 15 revenue for contracts with customers. We also noted that any IFRSs, including IAS 37, do not refer to more likely than not amount, whereas IFRS 15 and IAS 37 refer to expected value and most likely amount. Consequently, we recommend providing guidance on the consistent determination of a unit of account on a recognition threshold and on measurement, as presented in the staff conclusion on this of this paper. We recommend developing guidance as an interpretation of IAS 12. We would like to ask whether the interpretation committee agrees with the staff analysis and the recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Akemi. So this isn't a sweep issue.
No, probably controversial.
Comments, Andrew?
Yes, I think it's very much moving in the right direction. I very much welcome the bringing in of the IFRS 15 thinking on the choice of measurement approach between expected value and most likely amount, and also on detection risk. I'm not quite clear on whether we need or whether it's appropriate to have a probability recognition threshold as part of this. We have to recognise our current tax. And within that current tax overall position, there might be some uncertain tax positions which are somehow identified, pulled out, and this measurement choice, expected value, most likely amount, is applied to. But the tax is already recognised, so I'm not quite sure if it's meaningful or operational to have a kind of discrete probability threshold for the uncertain portion or which way that would go. I think unit of account, there is going to be some judgment around identifying whether you've got a there's a bunch of related uncertainties, whether that's a single position or a bunch of positions. But I think if we can get the right sort of directional guidance on how you apply the choice of measurement basis, there shouldn't need to be, we shouldn't need to say too much about the unit of account. Okay. Those are my comments.
But broadly supported.
Yes.
Martin?
Well, I agree with the general direction of the staff. What I'm missing a little bit, but I guess this then comes out in the interpretation, is that this then would be a topic of the critical accounting policies, which, methodology you have applied and why. I would expect that at least there is some description somewhere. On the other hand, and we could debate on this, I mean, currently it is sufficiently narrow. On the other hand, as said, I missed something for other uncertain tax positions, which are not income taxes. And I'm not sure when we are discussing this in terms of an interpretation, whether we could broaden this up or not, because this is only, well, I would say half the way. Specifically on the other uncertain tax position, there are the same uncertainties surrounded.
Bruce?
Thanks, Wayne. I'm quite supportive of the approach we've taken. Just a couple of comments I had on it. Firstly, on the unit of account, I agree. I think that's a very judgmental thing, and I think we've got to be very careful about trying to draw any sort of lines around that. I mean, I think that a lot of it's going to depend on the tax regime in the countries, how people apply it. And to be honest with you, when I kind of took a look at it, I'm not convinced that people battle with that too heavily. I think that they're going to be aware whether this is something that needs to be addressed in part or whether it's going to be addressed as a whole. So I'm more of a view that I think that one judgment call people make. On the possible approach, I mean, I like the answer. I think that the IFRS 15 is the right answer. I guess the only thing that in the back of my mind kept saying to me is, are we comfortable that when we're going to start from now on going forward, whenever we get to an issue where we need to start looking at some sort of possible approach for measurement, is this going to be our overriding factor that we're always going to now default to the position we've taken there? And the fact that we've waited on this all to be confirmed, I don't know. I guess I'll wait until I think we start seeing drafting something further and discussing further. But my only concern was if this is relating purely to an expense, we're taking principles out of a revenue standard and saying these need to be applied there. As I said, I'm not saying I don't necessarily disagree with the answer. I'm just saying I think it's an interesting precedent that we may be looking at. One small drafting thing, and this is probably that got to me a bit. IFRS 15 lists them as expected value and most likely amount. And yet, all the response here, you did them the other way around. It's a small thing to me, but I'd switch them the other way.
Thank you for noticing that.
Thank you.
I didn't want to raise it because I thought I was crazy. But there are two of us, we can't be. Okay, I've got John, Reinhardt, Rauntz, Mikkel, Tony, Charlotte, Bonnie, Carl. Okay. So, John?
I agree with the staff. Staff analysis. I suppose just two comments. One, I'm still not sure that I think it's an interpretation, the measurement of paragraph 46. It seems to me to be more of an amendment to the requirement to the standard. And I suppose the second comment, similar to what Bruce said, I mean, it seems like, and this is probably true of a number of papers, we seem to have adopted IFRS 15 as the latest version of our conceptual framework, and we're now bringing in concepts of measurement and other concepts from IFRS 15 into other areas, and I suppose I would think maybe we ought to ensure that that's an appropriate approach towards the measurement of these. I don't disagree with it. I think it maybe makes sense in this situation, but maybe a pause just to think on that.
Okay, next up, Laurence.
I also agree with the direction of looking at IFRS 15 for measuring uncertain tax position. I'm not sure, though, that I would go into much details about all the details about the expected amounts, more likely amounts, and providing all that detailed guidance here. Moreover, when I consider what was the question back was, there is a cash amount that is made to the tax authorities. Does this give rise to an asset? And I think here, and in developing the reasoning throughout what is going to be published ultimately, when that amount was paid, it's like a deposit to the tax authorities. So the question really is one of offsetting. Can I offset that deposit, which I am 100% certain to recover? I will recover that deposit either through settlement of the uncertain tax position, which I have to measure, or through recovery, because finally the uncertain tax position didn't crystallize and I don't have anything else to pay. So I think it is important to say that to distinguish the treatment of that payment, which is like a deposit of tax authorities, can I offset it against the liability I have to book and measure according to the direction you're going, which makes a net amount and perhaps a net asset. So I wouldn't like to mix the two things up. I think it is important for clarity to distinguish the steps.
Point taken. Reinhardt?
Like others, I agree with the direction of the project, and I think the providing some guidance will be helpful. My concerns, though, are that similar to what John said, I'm not sure whether an interpretation is the right route or whether it's an improvement or an amendment to IS 12, because it is fairly broad-reaching in terms of its scope. Secondly, with respect to the issue on scope, my comments are similar to Andrew. I'm not convinced that IS 12 has a probable threshold for recognition of current tax assets and liabilities. You recognize your current tax assets and liabilities. If there's uncertainties, then look to how you measure it. So I'm not convinced of that, and so I think there needs to be some more consideration given to the scope of the project, including things like, I think when we think about uncertain tax positions, it affects not only potentially current tax assets and liabilities, but also deferred tax assets and liabilities, given there could be uncertainties about tax bases, uncertainties about loss carry forwards, and so some definition of scope will be important in my mind. Unit of account, I agree with the comments made by others in terms of the need for use of judgment. And then in terms of the measurement, I also agree that IFRS 15 is, for purposes of this, a useful reference. I would not put criteria on when you would be able to use the expected value or most likely amount. I think those might be good examples of when they might apply, but I wouldn't narrow it down to only apply those methods in these particular circumstances.
Mikhail?
My understanding on the My understanding from the beginning was that the question was if we should have virtually certain or probable recognition of the asset, the cash that you provided to the tax authority, and if IS 37 or IS 12 should be the guidance. And then I think we concluded already from the beginning that IS 37 was not scoping in taxes. And by that, then you should come to a conclusion that you have the probable recognition threshold and for this tax asset. I was very happy to read the draft here because I have been quite worried about this. You know, all the discussions that has been around uncertain tax positions. I think this is very straightforward. We have recognition criteria, probable, and we have the measurement that I believe that you have used always, so to speak. This is the same that you would come to if you, in this case, then apply IS 37 methodology. And the question is there really any differences in practice when it comes to this or not? So is it really necessary to go into a big project in this respect? But I was very happy with the outcome because that is exactly what I would have come to the conclusion.
Thank you. Tony.
Like others, I share the view that I think this is moving in the right direction. My sense is that there is a gap in IS 12 in that it doesn't address uncertain tax positions specifically. I guess I'm not that troubled by it being an interpretation rather than an amendment, because there is a principle in IS 12, which is that you record the amount that you expect to pay or recover. And I can see that we can interpret that requirement. And in that context, I think it is helpful, as the staff lay it out, to say, well, you need to think about the unit of account. You need to think about what you recognize and what you don't. You need to think about how you measure it. So I think all of that directionally makes sense, and I think it would be a helpful addition, given that at the moment IS 12 is silent. I do agree that what we say about the unit of account ought to be a principle, and we should avoid getting into an awful lot of specifics, that we give people the principle that that's how you determine whether you consider this, this, and this together, but that we shouldn't get into an enormous amount of detail. And I think, a bit like Reinhardt, I agree that the notions in IFRS 15 are helpful. I'm just not sure we need all of the specific references, and all we're really saying is that you choose the measurement method that best reflects the situation that you have. And I don't think we need to say, well, it's the same as IFRS 15 or whatever. We just say there are a couple of ways that you might be able to measure it, and you don't get a free choice. You get to choose the one that best reflects what you have. And I probably wouldn't include those examples. So I think overall, I think this is moving forward in the right direction. And I think the next step is to look at some drafting, to actually see how this works out when it's drafted up.
Question for you. You said on the unit of account that you didn't want it too detailed. Of course, one of the problems that results from that is we find people saying, well, I've decided that all of my uncertain tax positions in Europe are a single unit of account, despite the fact that I have 25 different taxing authorities. I can't see how you... But we've seen in other situations in practice where people take views that outlandish. How do we limit that?
I don't think you can ever avoid the union of account requiring an element and maybe a significant element of judgment. So I don't think you can ever steer it away from being judgment. And therefore, I don't think significant amounts of guidance or application guidance would be helpful. I think it's finding a form of words that reflect the way these things are perhaps dealt with on the tax return or in discussion with the tax authority or something like that.
But by there you've already limited it, haven't you, so that I can't combine the United Kingdom and Finland.
Absolutely.
United Kingdom and Finland.
Absolutely. But I think what you're trying to get at with a principle for the unit of account is to account for things that are, I'll use the word economically linked, and that might not be the right word in the context of income taxes, but it's you're collecting together the items that will affect each other,
yeah,
and will be dealt with together in the context of the tax return or in the context of discussions with the taxing authority.
So you think Akemi is on the right track.
And clearly, yeah. Clearly, you can't call the tax authority in the United States and say, I'd like to offset these losses in the UK, and that clearly doesn't make sense.
No.
So, but what I wouldn't like is sort of rules that say you must.
Okay.
There's always going to be an element of judgment.
Laurence, is this on topic?
Yeah, it is on the topic. I mean, one of the issues, for instance, that will have to be addressed is when you are at a subsidiary level, the answer might be binary. But when you are at a group level where you have several subsidiaries in the same jurisdictions, then you may want to have another approach in looking at those issues.
Okay. Charlotte.
I agree with the approach. I like the approach on units of account. I thought the discussion was good. It'd be interesting to see how that's incorporated into the interpretation. In terms of the approach for measurement, I would rather either stop and say the entity should estimate the amount based on, you know, a reasonable estimation technique and not go into any details, or at the very least add stuff like the median, which is an approach that people use. I know that's not in IFRS 15, but it is a valid approach, and maybe actually more be able to be consistent with US GAAP as well. I think the discussion on more likely than not approach, the more likely than not approach is more of a probability threshold question, that once if you're above more likely than not, you're probable, then the measurement is based on the largest amount above that. So it's not strictly a, I guess it's not a strictly a direct replacement for the mean average or something like that. I mean, it is more akin to a median. So I wasn't sure if that discussion was directly on point to them.
I have always thought that the US approach was conflating a recognition and a measurement into a single thing,
yeah,
and saying this is what you come up with, and by the way, it's a product, a joint product of
it's
both
a
recognition threshold and an amount.
Yeah, it's the largest number that is probable.
Right.
So it's, yeah,
yeah. It's a funny, I've always found it a funny construction. Let's see, Bonnie, Carl, and then Kaz.
So I think my comments are generally in line with some of the others. I think we should pursue this. I think it's generally on the right track. I think maybe just a couple of points is, one, I do come from a US GAAP background. We are a dual reporter, and so I think we should not ignore the fact that there is existing guidance out there, even though it's not applicable in the IFRS markets, and leverage that a bit. I'm not saying cut and paste, not at all. But I think we should leverage some of the experiences that have happened in the US. To that extent, I think where we say in paragraph 37, it could increase costs, I'm not sure that the adoption of FIN 48 actually increased costs for companies. I think there was a lot of belly aching about it, but I think once it came into practice, people got down to it and did the measurement and accounted for it appropriately. So I think the issue was more of highlighting what uncertain tax positions were to the taxing authorities rather than it was a cost of actual calculation. And then I think kind of the approach for measurement, I think when you have I think there needs to be an allowance that the measurement method should be applicable to the particular, I guess, unit of account, kind of notwithstanding the particular item that you're looking at. Because some may be, it's an either yes or a no answer, in which case your measurement method will be a little bit different than there could be a range of values. So I think there should be a choice by an entity to, on a position by position basis, to choose the method that is the most appropriate method. It does require judgment, but each tax position between companies is going to be generally slightly different anyway. So I'm not sure that you can kind of limit, I would say, free choice, but it's more dependent on the facts and circumstances of the tax position itself. I guess using the expected value, I think you can arbitrarily get a difference to US GAAP, which again, thinking about in a dual GAAP reporting environment, does that really make sense? Is that appropriate just to get an arbitrary difference because of a required method under US GAAP versus a required method that may not be allowed under IFRS? So I would ask that we would take that into consideration as we're drafting.
Carl?
I'm much more comfortable with this direction than I was in the last meeting, which I was quite upset. I'm fine with the conclusions regarding unit of accounting. About measurement, I would prefer the wording of paragraph 31. Without the examples, and as John's comments, I would prefer amendments to IAS 12 rather than a new interpretation.
Although an interpretation would amend, it would become part of the body of the literature. So,
but just a new paragraph.
I see. Kaz, last call. Oh, and then Bruce.
Yeah,
and I have to go to the phones.
Yeah, I can understand the direction, but I just want to make sure that the scope is limited, and maybe that the uncertain tax position is, I think we need to kind of clearly define what it is. And also, not just current, but the whole or including deferred tax or uncertainty tax should be covered. I think I'm concerned a little bit about expanding the scope and also the measurement, like others said, that IFRS 15 is a new standard, and I just want to make sure that the impact of that introducing this would reduce the diversity and improve the current situation rather than have some more confusion.
If I can ask a question of the board members, it seems to me that IFRS 15 is a significant improvement in the articulation of a measurement approach, but not a materially new measurement approach. So it's a better articulation of what we already have. I see board members shaking their heads, yes. Okay. So we're not proposing to radically change anything. We may be drawing people's attention to perhaps the fact that they were misguided. Bruce, last call, and then the phones.
That's fine. I'll just make a quick comment. I know a number of people have mentioned not having all the guidance around IFRS 15 around the most likely expected value in the examples. I don't know if I'm in the minority. I would put that in. And the reason I'm saying it is what you've just said. This articulates it better. It brings it into somewhere where people understand it. So just in giving guidance, if we're going to draft something, my vote would be definitely to keep it in as is.
Let's go to the phones and start with Sandy.
Sorry, it took me a while to get it off mute there. I guess a while ago someone made the comment about looking at IFRS 13 as our new conceptual framework, and I sort of shared the same thoughts as I read this. I guess as I look at it, we're sort of saying you can pick and choose your unit of account, and you can pick and choose your measurement method. And is this an interpretation or is it new guidance? I guess the question is, how do users of the financial statements actually know what unit of account you chose and what measurement method that you chose? Are there going to be any disclosures around that? Because there seems like there's a lot of flexibility in what people can choose to do.
Yeah, we haven't discussed disclosures that might be triggered by this. We will have to do that later. Fei Long?
I agree with the staff analysis on the scope of project to cover all tax positions, and also agree that the judgment code to be applied for unit of account assessment. I think it's better to highlight it is not a free choice, and to provide some illustrative examples to show how to apply the judgment on unit of account. For possible approach to measure measurement, I don't see any significant advantage of the modified IFRS 15 approach versus IFRS 15 approach. For example, show in the modified IFRS 15 approach wording, it might give rise to some confusion on the relationship between unit of account and the different approaches to be selected. Why don't we just put those examples into illustrative files when we develop the interpretation.
We can consider that in drafting, certainly.
Okay.
Okay, let me see if I can sum up. First, I would compliment the staff on a beautifully executed strategy of bringing one set of proposals that were certain to be shot down, resulting in your second set of proposals seeming eminently reasonable. But no, I think you are to be complimented on having brought us to this point, which is one that we might not have arrived at without your help. I hear broad support for the approach. There is some uncertainty about whether it should be an interpretation or an amendment. There is also some criticism, some of it humorous, some of it not, both internally and externally, about an interpretations committee that doesn't seem inclined to produce interpretations. So I do think we owe it to the people who supervise our activities to take a stab at this as an interpretation. And then if we conclude that, yeah, we just don't think we can get it done, or if we expose it and people say, no, you shouldn't ought to have done that, then we have a rationale that we can present to the board. So I think we should pursue it as an interpretation, and I think that's the sense of the comments that I heard, with one or two exceptions. I take Bonnie's point about leveraging the FASB. Somebody at the FASB has a lot of scar tissue. Maybe that person is a former FASB staff member, not a current. In any event, we need to find that person, because my experience is that you learn potentially significantly more from that kind of a conversation than you learn from reading the basis for conclusions. The basis for conclusions rarely says, I couldn't get enough votes for any method other than this one. Well, that's doesn't come up very often. So let's reach out to Sue Cosper, identify the villain, and talk to him. But otherwise, I hear support for pursuing this. I think the next step is drafting and bringing a draft to a future meeting of the committee. Do I hear support for that? Okay. With that, I believe we are 5 minutes early for lunch.
Yep.
So we will break. We are scheduled to resume at 12:35.
Name not recorded.